Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens, families, and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. Distracted driving is any activity that diverts a driver's attention away from the primary task of driving. Distracted driving is a dangerous epidemic on America's roadways and increases the chance of a motor vehicle crash. More than 9 people are killed daily in the United States by distracted drivers. Younger, inexperienced drivers are at an increased risk and have the highest portion of distracted-related fatal crashes. This edition of 411 Teen welcomes Laura Adams, Safety and Education Analyst for DriversEd.com. Laura will unveil data on behind-the-wheel crashes. She'll look at Facebook use, Netflix watching, marijuana use, and drinking, in addition to how passengers respond to distracted drivers. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Drivers.com, the leading online driver education, recently released its 2018 Distracted Drivers in America report. The report examines drivers' behind-the-wheel behavior, habits, and decisions. It provides insight into how Americans, while driving, engage in a number of activities. Welcome to 411 Teen.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Oh, thanks. We're just looking forward to the information, the invaluable information that you can share with us. Would you tell us exactly what distracted driving involves?
There are many different types of distracted driving. Some I call old-fashioned because they've been around a long time. These include things like eating while you're driving, maybe putting on makeup while you're driving, even talking to passengers that are in the car with you can be a type of distracted driving. And then there are more serious things that involve drowsy driving, so, you know, being sleepy while you're driving, that's a distraction. It could be some type of drug use, alcohol use. These are also distractions. And more distractions are involving technology. So whether that's a smartphone that you have in your hand, it could even be technology that's built into your car. So it's some type of an entertainment system that's in your car, even trying to do voice commands, speakerphones, to, you know, use your cell phone or your smartphone in a better way. Those can also be distractions if you are not accustomed to using them seamlessly. So there are lots and lots of different types of distractions, but the bottom line is that they are taking your brain away from the focus that it needs while you're driving. So it's a cognitive distraction.
Okay.
There are physical distractions as well. So if your hand is holding your phone and it's not on the wheel, that's a physical distraction, but also a cognitive distraction is really just as serious because your brain cannot multitask. We just, you know, a lot of people say they can multitask.
Right.
But we don't. We really don't. It's called task switching. Your brain is switching between one activity and another. And if that activity is, let's say, a text thread that you're following or a conversation on the phone, a part of your cognition and your focus is devoted to that task. And so that means you have less cognition on the road ahead of you. And that's why it's dangerous. It simply takes your focus away from something that could be of a lethal situation. If you're in an accident at a high rate of speed, or you've got pedestrians on the road with you, there are just really no end to the problems that you can get into if you're not focused on your driving.
So what I hear you saying is even situations where you are not using your hands, because often automotive manufacturers will promote the hands-free, use hands-free. But hands-free does not mean that you will not be a distracted driver, right?
That's exactly right.
Okay.
And I do think that, you know, it's better than holding a phone.
Mm-hmm.
But study after study shows that cognitively you are just as distracted because you're having a conversation that could be emotional. It could be something that's complicated. And it may, you know, depending on who you're talking to and what the topic is, there may be a kind of a different level of distraction.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are thinking that you are 100% safe because you're hands-free, I think you're kidding yourself. I think people really need to understand that any level of activity that takes your brain away from the road, that is going to be a distraction, and I would consider it dangerous.
So what I hear you saying is that distraction, no matter what it is, if it's cognitive and your mind is on something else, you are focused on something else, if it's manual, where you may not, your hand may be off the steering wheel, you may have something in your hand, or we didn't talk much about visual, but I'm sure that visual too, if you're busy looking at something, then you're looking at the screen to try to determine where you're going, or you're looking at the screen for whatever may be the reason, that is a distraction also.
Absolutely. And talking about that visual impairment,
mm-hmm.
if you are going 55 miles an hour, you're covering 80 feet per second. So even glancing down at your phone for 3 seconds, 4 seconds to look at a text, to type a text, a lot of people tell us they're not only reading texts while they're behind the wheel, but they're typing them as well. So if that takes you just a few seconds, you could have covered the length of a football field in the time that you just glanced down at your phone for a few seconds. So thinking about that distance, that really should be sobering for a lot of people to imagine that you've covered the length of a football field and you
yes.
weren't even looking at the road.
Yes.
That's pretty scary.
Well, I have to add one distraction that you did not include that I saw today was shaving while driving, okay? So that is cognitive, that is manual, and that is visual.
Absolutely. Yeah, I hear a lot of stories about crazy things that people have seen.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen people reading a book, a paper book,
yeah.
you know, while they're driving. And I'm not talking about just sitting in traffic, but actually driving
what?
At a high rate of speed on the highway. So we do. We see all kinds of crazy things, and I would recommend that if you see something like that, keep a safe distance from that driver. You know, either get around them very quickly or leave them in front of you, you know, to where you can see what they're doing and any recklessness that may happen. But, yes, we see all kinds of very bizarre behavior on the road when it comes to distractions.
Now, if we put the distractions in a hierarchy, where does texting fall? Because it seems
yeah.
to involve all three, the visual, the manual, the cognitive, and it seems to be a very popular distraction.
It really is. And I would say, you know, we know that drunk driving is on the decline.
Mm-hmm.
It's not
yes.
a trend that is increasing, thank goodness, but any amount of drunk driving is obviously horrible. I would say it's not quite as bad as drunk or drugged driving,
mm-hmm.
but as you mentioned, it is not only cognitive, but it's certainly physical, and as we mentioned, if you're looking at your phone for just a few seconds, you have a lot of visual impairment there. So it is very, very serious, and I think a lot of people don't take it seriously because they're on their phone all day long, right?
Yeah.
We're almost addicted to our phones.
They're like an appendage also, I assume.
Exactly, and so when you get in the car, you don't think about putting that down or putting it away. It just tends to stay right there with you. So I recommend that people put their phones in the glove box in their car the minute they get in. Just put it in the glove box. You'll know it's close if you need it, but it won't be so obvious that you can see incoming texts and hear incoming calls. You know, that's just one way to put a barrier between you and the device.
Now, as I understand it, the younger drivers are at an even higher risk.
They are, and there are many reasons for that. Younger drivers are obviously inexperienced. If they've just gotten their license, even if they've passed with flying colors, they're still inexperienced in terms of not having as many hours on the road as older drivers typically do. So we know that a majority of accidents that young drivers get in, it happens really quickly after they get their license. As soon as they get on the road, that really is the most dangerous time. So this is something to think about, and this is why there are graduated licensing laws, is to make sure that drivers can kind of ease their way into driving. So this is something that we want to think about. Driving during the right time of day is important, and statistics show that between the hours of 9 at night and midnight, that's when there are the most frequent number of teenage deaths in motor vehicles. That's a very dangerous time for teens. So if you have the ability to stay off the road during that hour, and parents can make sure that their teens are not on the road late at night, that's one way to stay safe. Another is not to drive with a lot of other kids in the car with you. We know that the risk increases with every passenger that you have in the car with you. So the risk increases 44% if a teenager has one other teenager in the car with him or her, and it doubles with two passengers, and it quadruples with three or more passengers. So we do know that teenagers having friends in the vehicle, if they're talking, that is really one of the most common distractions. And unfortunately, it is one of the most common reasons why teens get into accidents. They say, well, I was looking over to talk to my friend, or I looked behind me to talk to a friend, and before you know it, they're in an accident.
You're tuned in to 411 Teen. This hour, we are talking about distracted driving. We have Laura Adams, and she is sharing her expertise. First, we're going to take a break. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. This hour, we are looking at distracted driving. Joining me on the phone, I have Laura Adams. She is a safety and educational analyst for DriversEd.com. Laura, I had to interrupt you. I know you were talking about the impact of passengers. Any suggestions that you offer to those parents whose teenager may pick up their younger siblings from school? Because that's still another passenger, or passengers, depending on how many they're picking up, in the car.
Yes, on the one hand, we want teens to help out their friends and help out siblings with rides. But on the other hand, we know that it can be dangerous. So I would say trying to set as many rules as possible is going to be the way to go. Try to help your teen driver understand that talking is a distraction, you know, and make it seem just as serious as texting or being on the phone talking. So talking in person is no different than talking on the phone. It is definitely a cognitive distraction. So if you have siblings that are riding together, you know, as a family, just make a rule that, hey, when this person is driving, everybody needs to be quiet. Everybody needs to be helping the driver and thinking about the driver, keeping the volume down, not talking directly to the driver. Those are some simple conversations. It certainly is probably easier said than done, But I think that just letting it be known that, you know, the driver's cognition and the driver's attention is important for everybody's safety, you know, and anybody who's in the car who has ridden with a driver should be polite, you know, basically mm-hmm. trying to make sure that even if you're a passenger, that you are respecting the attention of the driver. So as a driver, I think you should be able to say, hey, can you keep it down or maybe help me navigate or let's talk about this when we get to our destination. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The driver really has to be the one to speak up and say, hey, I need a little bit of quiet here, or let's not play the radio so loud. You know, trying to preserve his or her ability to focus is important. And then, likewise, when you are a passenger with somebody else, that you also show that same level of concern and respect.
And keeping the volume down applies to all volume, whether it's the radio or conversation, because sometimes the driver may be in the car by him or herself, but they will have the, you know, radio on so loud or whatever, they're playing music so loud that I don't see how they can think.
Absolutely. So thinking about all of the potential distractions, mm-hmm. things that are very innocent when you're not in a car can turn lethal when you are in the car. So it's just really the education and the awareness of, you know, what the potential dangers are.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know driversed.com just released their 2018 Distracted Driving in America report. What was that? Just this month, earlier this month, correct?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. And I guess what I gathered from it is that distracted driving really in the incidents is increasing. It's not decreasing.
That's right. We found that 73% of the driversed.com survey said that they are reading texts. So 73% admitted to reading texts while behind the wheel. And 54% said they were typing texts behind the
that's
wheel.
That's worse. I don't know.
So it is, those were very high, you know, high statistics. I was a bit surprised that they were that high. But we also asked the respondents if they felt that they were using the phone more than they probably should. And 39% did say, yes, I think I am using the phone more than I should, but I'm still doing it. So that tells us that people do know that it's probably not best, but they seem to be addicted to the phone and they really feel like they can't help themselves. So unfortunately, that is a very shocking trend, and I think the only key there is that, again, it's the awareness. I think it helps people to see these shocking statistics. It makes it a little bit more real and mm-hmm. helps us understand that it is a problem, and I think it's just going to grow. I think the problem is going to get worse and worse unless we really have stricter laws. And really better education for young drivers. And I say young drivers, but it's not just young drivers.
You read my mind. Excuse me for interrupting you, because I was just going to ask you, share with us about the demographics. I mean, when we're talking about this America Report 2018, who were the respondents? Were they all young folks? Or who's doing this?
Yeah, so it was a pretty wide range of ages.
Okay.
Basically, we took a look at all age ranges, all demographics, all geographic areas in the United States, different income levels. Okay. We took a very wide and statistically significant look at what's going on with all of these different behaviors. So, yes, it's not just young kids and teens. It's older drivers as well who admit to doing the texting and reading texts and typing texts while they're driving. So that definitely is not a good sign. We also found that people are doing some pretty bizarre behavior, like we talked about earlier. 8% said they are watching YouTube videos while they are driving. 4% said they are watching Netflix programming while they're driving. So those are also some pretty shocking statistics. In addition to social media, 18% said they're checking their social media accounts while they're driving. So these are, this is a wide variety of behavior, but all of them are incredibly distracting. And I think social media and certainly video are distracting not only because they take our attention from the road, but also it's that visual impairment that we've been talking about, and in some cases it's also the manual impairment if you're holding a phone, in front of you. But social media can be a very, emotional type mm-hmm. of engagement
yes.
when you're there, whether positive or
negative. Mm-hmm.
So that can be certainly, I think, one of the worst distractions that we saw.
Well, as the safety and education analyst, what did you learn? What were the results from this study that you found, appalling?
Yeah, I would say, in addition to the video watching, also the drug use that
okay.
we asked about, 10% said that they have driven after smoking or ingesting marijuana within the past year. So this is telling us that there is definitely an increase in drug driving. So drunken driving, drinking while driving, may not be on the increase, but other types of drug driving is increasing. So marijuana use is something that I think we're going to have to watch pretty closely as more states legalize its
right.
use.
Yeah.
There really isn't a good way to detect marijuana use for drivers, and we really don't have a whole lot of education around it. But all I can say is that if an officer does suspect that you're using marijuana, they can ticket you for a DUI or DWI just the same as they could if they found that you were drinking and driving.
Okay. But what is the attitude? I guess they feel like marijuana. I know in other studies when we've looked at attitudes about drug use, the attitude with marijuana is that it's not that bad to drive after you have indulged or whatever.
Right. We did find that 84% say that they think drinking is way more dangerous,
mm-hmm.
Than marijuana use while driving. I would say to anybody that thinks that it's okay to drive while they're high, it is still an impairment. Any type of impairment, whether it's due to prescription, legal drugs or illegal drugs or alcohol, all of these are taking your normal perceptions and changing them, switching them in some way. And, you simply are just not the same driver after you have been drinking or using drugs. You're just not the same driver. There's no way that you can think you have the same capabilities and reaction times. So many people say, they feel that they are still a good driver.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality mm-hmm. is that's part of the drug kind of talking to you. If you think, oh, yes, I feel great, I feel fine to drive, you really are never the same. You are never as good to drive as you would be sober. So, this is just part of the education that people need to understand how these drugs do affect your ability to make decisions and react. It's just not going to leave you as capable on the road.
Well, I would think an issue that will be forthcoming will be the whole issue between the use of alcohol and the use of marijuana. For example, I know I would guess probably around about a third of drivers feel like they're very comfortable, I know this, with having had one drink and think that they can drive. And they could have had one drink and had an accident, and one drink will not be enough. They will not be over the legal level of alcohol. How do you compare? How do they compare that with marijuana, when you're saying there is no way of actually testing at this point, the officer may suspect, but what? Yeah. So, you know?
They really don't have any good testing method right now, and that's what, you know, there really isn't any type of a similar blood alcohol awareness or measurement for marijuana use. And I'm sure somebody will develop something brilliant, you know, eventually to help with testing. But right now, it just doesn't exist. So it really is up to the officer to try to determine whether they feel somebody is impaired or not. And that's going to vary significantly from person to person, from, you know, state to state, officer to officer. All of these things really don't have any kind of standardization yet, but I'm sure we will eventually.
Well, all of this information that you have gathered from your study is very enlightening and helpful. What's the next step? What will you do with it? How will it impact law enforcement and drivers?
Yes, definitely awareness is the first step. We wanted to get some hard numbers around all of these difficult behaviors, bad habits that are going on and bring them to light. And I just think understanding the scope of the problem is the first step.
Okay.
Also, education, making sure that all of these issues are part of education, not only for teen drivers, but defensive driving courses for mature drivers as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes down to individual drivers taking the initiative to be safer. You know, I do think eventually some of the laws will catch up with these bad behaviors and they will become more restrictive. But, you know, in many states, the laws are not that strict for using a phone or texting or talking on the phone while driving. So it really does come down to the individual driver taking responsibility and also for parents of teen drivers to set those boundaries, make sure they're getting the education that they need. And if they don't have a driver's education course in school, making sure they get to some type of course. Driversed.com is the number one online driving school. So we offer courses not only for teenage drivers and practice tests for new drivers, but we also offer driver education for older drivers as well. And if you do get a ticket, you know, maybe you get into a situation where you're speeding or you get a ticket for something else, maybe not wearing a seatbelt. Any type of a moving violation will put points on your driving record. And those points are what the insurance companies are looking at. And when they see those points, they're going to raise your insurance rates. So if you can take a traffic ticket school to keep the points off of your record, you can also keep your auto insurance rates as low as possible.
Well, I think I know what you're going to say, but I'd like to hear it. As far as driver training and driver education, do you think it should be required for all drivers?
I do, and I think that many times parents think that they are sufficiently equipped to teach kids how to drive. And even if you are a great driver, I think that parents need a third party. They need a professional to make sure that their child is getting all of the skills that they need and putting them in situations that challenge them. You know, driving at night, maybe driving in bad weather, all of the different types of situations that a child could, you know, could find themselves in as a brand new driver. That's the job of a professional teacher. So if the parents can reinforce what the professional is saying, that's terrific. But I do think it helps for kids to hear it from somebody else besides mom and dad.
Right.
So getting it in school is terrific, but as I mentioned, not all schools are providing it. So, yes, getting some type of education really is just not only a way to keep yourself safe on the road, but it's a way we can all stay safe on the road.
Let's talk about, in these last 2 minutes before we take a break, the driver-ed.com. I mean, can you share the process for accessing it? Is there a cost to it? How long is the training? Just will you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So going to driversed.com is going to give you a menu of all of the different types of courses that we offer. Mm-hmm. So there's something there no matter your situation. If you're looking for in-car driving lessons or you're looking for online driver's education, traffic school, licensing, practice permit test for licensing, all of that is there. And it's going to vary depending on where you live. So you'll choose the type of education that you're looking for, and you'll put in your zip code or your state, and it will give you all of the menu of options that are available to you. So just depending on what your needs are. And the cost for driver's education is very affordable. It does vary depending on the state where you live, but it is something that can really pay off. And I mentioned auto insurance rates. If you do complete a driver's education course, you want to let your auto insurance company know, because in many cases, you will qualify for a discount. So this is definitely going to apply for teen drivers, but it also will apply for older drivers as well. It's typically around age 50 or 55 that the insurers will offer a discount for education. So, you know, in some cases, it could be 10-15%.
That's significant. That can make a difference.
That can pay for the cost of the course right there. So this is something that really is an investment in yourself. And if you have the ability to get an auto insurance discount, hey, that's just another bonus.
I have more questions, but we're going to take a brief break. During that time, you might think about the different type of instruction that's involved in-car and proactive type driving. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
Did you know that according to ABC News, 87% of the 6,000 teens that die every year die because of driving with distractions? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield, and joining me on the phone is Laura Adams, Safety and Education Analyst for DriversEd.com. Laura, you had been talking about the different courses and options that one could take on DriversEd.com. Would you elaborate a little bit more on the in-car driving online?
There's actual in-car driving lessons available in several states. Right now, California, Texas, and Georgia. This is when you have a professional instructor there in the car with you, and they're offering these lessons for students of all ages and skill levels. So it doesn't matter if you're just starting to drive or you've been driving for decades. It's a great opportunity to increase your skill, and it covers everything that you need to know to master the driving test, and also the skills that you need simply to be a safe, confident driver. So that is, very different, obviously, from the online types of courses. The online courses are made to prepare for a knowledge test. So, again, this can qualify you for a discount, or it could just be to become a better driver. So the good thing with online courses is that you get to choose when you want to learn. You get to choose when and where to go through the course. And each lesson is packed with all kinds of interactive features, and it's tailored based on where you live. And you can also choose an online course for teens, adults, or seniors. And it's going to tailor the information based on your age and based on where you live, because the laws in each state are a little different. So So those are the main differences between online and actual in-car lessons. And if you're going for your permit test, a lot of people don't know that 70% of drivers actually fail their permit test the first time that they take it. So if that's happened to you or a child that's been trying to practice, don't despair. You know, it's just pretty normal that they're going to fail the first time around. But if you do go through the driversed.com online test, I think you'll definitely be a lot more prepared, and you can probably pass on your first try.
Well, an interesting item that you all explored on the 2018 assessment or survey was the observing of distracted driving, how people respond when they are in a car where the driver is distracted. Would you talk about that?
Yes, we wanted to find out if people have ever been in a situation where a driver is distracted. So perhaps it's an Uber driver or a Lyft driver, any one of the ride-sharing services. And we wanted to find out what people would do in those situations. And 49% said that they would ask the driver to stop using his or her phone, and then they would also report that driver at the end of the ride. But 21% said that they would do nothing if they had an Uber driver that was distracted, which, you know, I found a little shocking.
Nothing. So, I mean, they wouldn't report them. Maybe would they report them and maybe not even tell that they reported? You know, not he or she would not be aware that they were reporting, but they wouldn't report them at all, is what you're saying. I want to make sure.
That's what our survey found. So I think the takeaway there is that if you are someone that uses Uber and Lyft frequently, you know, you're probably going to get a bad driver eventually, and you want to definitely report that driver. And as you mentioned, you can do it very easily once the ride is over, and that particular driver won't even know that you have submitted that report about him or her. This is something that I think is good for all of us. If you're reporting the bad drivers, they're not likely to get as many rides, or perhaps they won't be the chosen driver if they're getting bad ratings. So definitely take a moment and report a bad driver if you feel unsafe in any way, whether it's distraction or just how they're driving, how they're behaving. That's very important to report.
As we look at distracted driving, and I know you've talked a lot about, you know, prevention and the education that is necessary in prevention, anything else that you would identify that would be very helpful or be a prevention tip for drivers?
I think parents really can be doing a better job as role models for their children. If a child sees mom or dad eating while they're driving, putting on makeup while they're driving, using their phone while they're driving, the obvious message is that it's okay for me to do it too. So even young children are watching you, and even if they're not anywhere near the age to be allowed to drive, they are certainly noting how mom and dad are driving. So think of yourself as a role model when you're in the car with your kids. Put your phone in the glove box. You can also use the time in the car as a tool, as a teaching tool, to let kids know, hey, I am you know, putting on my blinker, so we're going to show everybody that we're going to take a right turn. Or we're
great.
Going to do this because we want to be safe. So use that time productively and make it a little mini lesson, and by the time your child is ready to drive, they will have absorbed a lot of great information from you.
Well, you will have modeled the right behavior, the correct way to drive, I would think, and that serves. Modeling, we know, is very impressionable with kids. So
absolutely. And I would say also, if you do have a teen driver, don't think that they need to respond to you immediately. Many times teens tell us they're on the phone with mom and dad because mom and dad want to know where they are. So set the expectation that the teen should get to a safe location, then return your call or then text you. Don't think that, you know, don't set the expectation that they should be responding to you immediately, because that could put them in an unsafe situation.
What responsibility, or if any, do you feel that the automobile manufacturers have? For example, they have these screens. They encourage you to look at the screen. I know we can't get rid of them, but are there any interventions that they could apply? That I'm thinking, is there anything that they could do to stop this, or to at least lessen this distracted driving? Maybe there'd be an app where the parents can control, I don't know, how much they're talking on the phone, or I'm speculating all kinds of things here, but are you aware of anything like that down the road?
What I do know is that there are many apps that are available that you as a parent can control. You can know where your kids are. You can know if they're using the phone while they're driving. So there are some good technology tools out there. And if you can turn technology from the culprit into the cure, that's something that I think, you know, kids can get on board with, because we know the technology is not going away. So if you can use it in a positive way, for instance, there is an app called Mentor for Families, and that's one of the apps that we offer at driversed.com. So once you enroll in a course, you will be able to download that app, and it's something that you can use for your entire family to see which drivers are doing different types of behavior. So, you know, who's speeding? How hard are you hitting the brakes? How fast are you taking turns? All of those sort of driving metrics can be measured. So that's one way that parents mm-hmm. can sort of keep tabs on what's going on with their young drivers. And, you know, in terms of coordinating that with the actual car, I do think that down the road we'll probably see a lot of innovation when it comes to safety and integrating the car with these types of apps. It's just probably going to be inevitable, because I think the demand will be there.
What about the effects of the individual state legislations on distracted driving? And I know that varies from state to state. For example, here in Florida, one can drive and talk perfectly legal. It's not a big issue. Even for them to pull you over, they can't pull you over. Let me get this correct. They can't pull you over specifically for use of cell phone. But if you're in an incident and your phone was used, then they can cite you.
Right. It does vary so much from state to state. And I think that as the regulations become a little bit more strict, we're going to see better behavior. People certainly do not want to get ticketed. They do not want expensive tickets to deal with. So it does work as an incentive not to pick up the phone. States like California, you know, have been on the cutting edge of this type of regulation, where they've completely prohibited all use
yes.
of phones. I mean, you can't even touch the phone if you're using it as a mapping device. So, you know, you do see very, very different regulations. And we do know that the tighter the regulation, the better the drivers,
okay.
and the fewer
okay.
the distractions and tickets related to phones. So, you know, it is going to vary depending on the state's needs and what type of leaders are in those
mm-hmm.
states and their experience with this. So I think that it will change drastically down the road as we do get into more and more distractions and we see the statistics. And, you know, nobody wants to see teens dying due
yeah.
to distractions like their cell phones. So I'm hoping that the states will be more proactive and we'll see a lot more useful regulations for drivers.
In these last few minutes, I just kind of would like to review very quickly some of the factors that I think are very salient to what we're talking about. One is that drivers who use handheld phones are four times, this is what I read, and I'd like to have you comment on it, four times more likely to be involved in a crash.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so that's correct.
Not, again, we go back to the fact that it is a cognitive distraction that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So just because you've got a hands-free device, just because you've got voice commands in your phone, that does not mean that you are a safe driver.
Yeah. Are there other points that you would like to emphasize? For example, I would like you to identify again the risk factors, because I think if everyone hears what these risk factors are, one clearly is being a young, inexperienced driver.
Absolutely.
Even if they have their driver's license, I mean, that doesn't mean that they can just have full rein. And if you would elaborate on that.
Absolutely. Just inexperience. It's just one of those things. You know, drivers are going to have to log more hours on the road in order to get better. So limiting teen drivers' ability to drive at night, limiting their ability to have multiple passengers in the car
mm-hmm.
is going to allow them to drive, but, you know, restrict those situations that are going to be less safe for them. So we're talking about all types of distractions, whether it's alcohol, talking while you're driving, being drowsy and sleepy. All of these things are, you know, what I would consider lethal, not only for teenagers, but also for older drivers, mature drivers. Unfortunately, many people are still not using their seatbelt, you know, and I wouldn't call that a distraction, but it is very unsafe.
I'm glad you brought that up. I was floored at the number of individuals who are not using seatbelts, and particularly the older individuals who are not using it.
Yeah, I think they are, you know, from an era where seatbelts were not required, maybe not even available in a car, and so they're just not in the habit of using them. But we know that they do prevent death. They do keep us safer when we're in a crash. So, you know, no matter your age, you definitely need to be using your seatbelt and also cutting out all the distractions possible.
Okay. At what point... someone asked me, at what point should one start to train their child, teach their child how, when to drive and how to drive? And I'd say that because we have some rural areas where parents have their children operating cars, tractors, at 12 and 13 years of age.
Yeah, I would say that it really comes down to the child and their ability.
Okay.
Believe it or not, kids these days are driving at an older age than
mm-hmm.
in previous decades.
Yes.
They tend to want to drive a little bit later, and I think it's because they have social media as such an easy way to connect with friends. You know, they're not relying on a vehicle to go see friends. So if a child is not ready to drive, I would say don't force them. Let them kind of come to it when they feel ready and responsible. So that's, you know, one thing. And letting the kids have some practice time, I think, is great. If they do want to drive at an early age and you can practice with them in a rural area, I think that's great. I think the more experience that they have coming into their licensing requirements, the better off they'll be.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned how the age is increasing before they're getting older before they get their driver's license. I've been very surprised in talking with teens who have not been that motivated, not getting their driver's license is not that important. However, you know, when I was young, getting our driver's license was definitely a badge, you know, to have gotten that driver's license at 15 or 16 or as soon as you could get it, where that just is not the case today.
It is. It's a very different outlook. So, you know, in some cases that is good for mom and dad. It can be a little less expensive to insure a driver as they get older. You know, even getting your license at 17 and getting insurance at 17 is a little less expensive than at age 16.
Mm-hmm.
There is, you know, a financial benefit to that. But many parents are ready for kids to drive. They're ready for them to be able to take themselves to school, take mm-hmm. siblings to school, and just be mindful that if a child isn't ready and they say that they're not ready, you may want to listen and make sure that they do get a little bit more time to prepare.
I have been talking with Laura Adams, safety and education analyst for DriversEd.com. Many thanks to my listening audience for your time and your ear. I invite you to tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Ken Smith. If you would like to participate in 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. 411 Teen archives are available as streaming audio and as downloads from WFSU.org. Check us out on Facebook.